Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks. Rabbi Cormas is back this morning, and I am so excited to talk about Passover, which we are in the midst of right now. It's also Holy Week. Rabbi, thank you for coming back. How are you?
Thank you, Melissa, for the invitation. I'm doing great, and it's wonderful to be again with you. Thank you so much for the invitation and to talk a little bit about this holy time for different religions around the world.
Yeah, it really is a special time. And Rabbi, I'm so glad that you're here. A happy Passover to you. I'm curious with Passover, really quick, Rabbi, is there a cutoff for how many matzah balls you're allowed to eat? Because I had six at our Seder on Saturday, and I've gotten a lot of backlash about that. Yes, six.
Let me tell you something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Matzah ball soup is one of my favorite foods as well.
And, right?
You know, one of the favorite foods of my kids as well. So I think between the two nights, I ate maybe 12. So
okay.
I doubled you.
And perfect.
There is no limit. So
okay.
You can have as much as you want.
Perfect. Did you have stomach aches as well? Because I struggled.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I struggle
okay.
with the same
right.
every year.
Every year. Totally worth it, though, Rabbi. Totally worth it. I love it. Well, first of all, let's talk about sort of, you know, this is a really special year because you have Passover leading right into Easter weekend. I mean, just talk about the significance of this holiday week and really whether you follow the Jewish traditions, the Christian traditions, you know, what this week really represents.
Well, this is really a holy time for the three major Western religions. Eastern will be this Sunday, and we, the Jewish people, are celebrating Passover this week. And we don't have to forget about our Muslim brothers and sisters who will be celebrating the month of Ramadan shortly by mid-April.
Yeah.
April 13th mm-hmm. is going to be the first night, the first day of Ramadan. So this is really a holy time for the three major religions, and I think there is a common topic that we share, Christians and Jews, when we celebrate Passover and Easter. And I think that two of the main elements of these celebrations are suffering and hope. And I think that those are two common elements that are part of our traditions when we celebrate this time of the year. You have to remember the suffering of Jesus on the cross and the hope of his coming back and carrying the sins of people and redeeming people from their sins. And the same with the Jewish people, the same topics of suffering and hope, suffering of slavery, but the hope of redemption and the hope that God liberated us from slavery and brought us to the promised land. So I think that those topics are part of our modern world as well. You know, when we see the current pandemic and we see so many people suffering and struggling with the pandemic on so many levels, on a physical level, on a spiritual level, and their finances and the loss of relatives and loved ones, it's a lot of suffering. But at the same time, I think that in the light of Easter and Passover, there's always hope. There's always hope for a better future. And there's always hope for a better time that hopefully will come soon. So when I see both holidays, I see these two ideas of suffering and hope. And, you know, a better world and a better society is possible, and a better time is possible. We have to hope, and we have to wait for that redemption.
Mm-hmm. You know, and Rabbi, it's so interesting because especially with the announcement that came out of the Catholic Church a few weeks back, you know, we've been talking a lot. I'm very open about the fact that I'm a faith-based person. My father's family, they were all, you know, they all grew up Jewish. My mother grew up Catholic. We were all raised Protestant, if you could figure out that math equation. But we all always had a faith base and we practiced Judaism still. You know, my son, who's now the fourth generation, you know, in the Sheck family, you know, coming up with being part of like the Seder Passover and being, you know, doing Shabbat dinners and Hanukkah and celebrating, you know, the new year together, like teaching him these traditions, even though he belongs to the Congregational Church. Like, I think it's important that we understand that a lot of these religions actually are very connected to one another. They obviously are not the same, but they're very interconnected. connected. And I was curious if you could just talk about the idea of, even if you don't have like a faith that you have, like let's say you don't identify as a Jew or as a Christian or as a Buddhist or whatever the case may be, to me, I keep coming back to the theme, you know, you touched on it, the pandemic. I think more than ever right now, there's so much political turmoil. There's a lot going on socially with humanity. There's things going on with obviously our health. I think people really, the answer to our issues more times than none is our faith. Could you maybe touch on that a little bit? Why this week is a great opportunity, if people don't follow any kind of religion basis, why they should take the opportunity to maybe explore it? Just a little bit.
Well, you know, Melissa, that numbers related to religion are declining, right? We know that people are becoming less and less religious in our modern world. So certainly modern times are posing a big challenge for religions going forward. And to me, religion gives me a compass how to navigate challenging times and, you know, joyous times as well. To me, religion is that stick that helps you to keep balance while you are moving through your life. So I certainly respect people who don't follow any religion. And at the same time, I admire people who decide to follow a particular religion, because it's hard to live in a modern world and to have a faith, right? Because we live in a very tangible, concrete world where, well, I do not see God, right? I cannot touch God. I cannot see God. I cannot talk to God. Right. So it's easier to not believe in God. But at the same time, for people who do believe in God, I think it gives you, or at least it gives me, a compass. It gives me a certain order to my day, to my week, to my life. It gives me also a moral compass, how to lead my life in a more meaningful way. So as you said, I think that these times of the year are wonderful opportunities for people to come closer to their religion and for others to start exploring what are the messages and what are the values of the different celebrations that our religions have to offer. In particular, regarding Passover, you know, you can say, wow, yeah, this is, you know, an ancient story, and who knows if Pharaoh existed, who knows if Moses existed, right? And these are fairy tales or myths that the Bible is telling me about thousands of years ago. Who knows, you know, if this really happened? But I think that the modern reader and the modern believer, there are so many things, so many beautiful things that we can learn from these stories, right? Mm-hmm. We can learn, for example, that slavery is not necessarily a physical condition, or Egypt is not a physical place. There are so many Egypts around the world.
Yes,
right?
I love that.
Freedom is an attitude of life, right? Mm-hmm. And the promised land is not only a collective promised land, but it's more than that. It's a personal promised land that we all yearn for, and we all want to get there at a certain point in our life. And when we talk about Pharaoh, right? Pharaoh is not only a cruel king who lived in a certain time in a certain country. Mm-hmm. To me, Pharaoh represents more than one man.
Yeah.
He's, you know, the symbol of every cruel and heartless ruler in history who are oppressing the needy, who are oppressing those who are living under their rule. So there's so much that we can learn from the story of Passover, the story of Jesus, the story of Muhammad and Ramadan that is coming up. That these are not only ancient stories that happen in a particular time. I think that they have a very powerful message for the modern practitioner of a particular religion.
Yeah. Rabbi Cormis, I couldn't have said it better myself. You are a poet, truly, my friend. Thank you so much for coming on this morning, and happy Passover to you, my friend.
Thank you, Melissa, and keep up those matzeval. They are great.
Yeah, I will. Don't you worry. I might have my mom make more of them just before Passover runs out this week. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you soon.
Happy holidays.
You too.
It's time to go beyond the classroom and check in with the Discovery Museum. It's science you may not know on WICC 600.
Well, David, it sounds like something is getting a lot of help from the moon this morning. Good morning. What can you tell us?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, if you're going to, you know, try to save the world economy and, and kind of get shipping moving again through the Suez Canal, you can use, well, practically all the help you can get. That's right. It looks like the getting the shipping and our world economy back on track just to save our world economy. We're
so,
going to need to get the moon involved.
What is the Suez Canal? Forgive me for asking that.
Yeah, so the Suez Canal is actually it's a channel that was cut in the Suez in Egypt that really revolutionized our trade. You know, before, if you wanted a ship to go from Europe to the East Indies or to Asia, India, and China, you had to go around Africa. And for a long time, that was really the only way you can get, ships from one part of the world to the other.
Wow.
But with the building of this canal, the Suez Canal, it cut like thousands of miles off that trip. And, today in terms of, global shipping, it's a critical artery that connects to, Europe and the Asian markets. And it's basically how a lot of, goods actually travel, through that Suez Canal. Over time, though, the ships have just gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. And so these cargo ships are just enormous. And unfortunately, one of those ships just got stuck in the Suez Canal.
Wow.
And it's a bit of a mystery how that happened. There's talk that it might have been a pilot error or human error. There's actually a little known effect. It's called a bank effect. When you've got ships traveling through these really tight channels, the stern of the ship actually starts to get attracted to the bank through some hydrodynamic pressure. And so what may have happened is that there might have been this bank effect where the whole ship started to pivot. And then there wasn't any way to straighten it out. And then there is talk that there might have been some high winds. So coupled with all of these effects, it took the bow of the ship and rammed it into the bank. And
wow.
How do you move a 200,000 metric ton ship and just dislodge it? And so there was all of these efforts to try and just get it to push back
move.
Into the move. Just move. This was really bad. There were like 400 cargo ships
wow.
that were just waiting. You could see it. There were like satellite images of all these ships.
Yeah, talk and about so, a traffic jam. Good Lord.
It was a huge traffic jam. And so they were like there was this one opportunity that they thought, okay, this might help. And it was through the tides. Okay. So the moon modulates our tides. And as it creates these tides, you get high tides and low tides, high tides and low tides. But there's a little known effect that the sun actually contributes to the tides too. It's a gravitational body, but its contribution is a little smaller. But there's an alignment when the moon, Earth, and sun line up in a nice little line during two phases of the moon. It's the full moon and the new moon. And it turns out that in those times when the Earth, sun, and moon line up, you get a little more of a contribution of your tide. It's actually
so you get like an even higher tide.
You get an even higher
oh,
tide.
Oh, cool.
So they're like, okay, this is gonna work because it just so happened that there was going to be a full moon the last weekend. So I said, okay, even better for this full moon, and this is what probably was the kicker, was that the moon was actually closer to the Earth at that full moon. So this is
wow.
going to be even better. And so, the path that the moon takes around the Earth is not a perfect circle. And so sometimes it can be as close as, 225,000 miles, and other times it's as far away as 250,000 miles. Well, this past weekend, at the full worm moon, as it was called, the springtime moon, it was about 226,000 miles away. And that's pretty close. And so the tide was actually going to be even higher than it normally would be.
Oh, wow.
During one of these spring tides, which is the spring tides are tides not related to the season, but they're related to it. Just the tide springs up a little higher
right,
than
right.
normal. And so we had the spring tide and we had the moon closer. And then that caused, if you looked at the tide charts during these past few days, there was going to be like a 7-foot rise
in the
ties. And so they're like, okay, this is our shot. This is our shot to just get this thing to float again. So they're dredging and dredging and dredging, and they're waiting and dredging and dredging and dredging as the tide gets higher and higher and higher. And they finally were able to get the boat Ever Given to move.
So they got it out.
They got it out, yes.
Thanks to the moon.
Yeah,
good Lord. Oh, my gosh. Well, David, okay, so there were a lot of things that, I mean, the stars aligned, no pun intended, but seriously, that's what happened here. So, like, the question now is, are they going to, like, I'm curious, are they going to now change the protocols of how big the ships can be to get through there? Because that's a big issue. I mean, again, this is crazy that it worked out this way, but you ain't going to get this lucky all the time. It's just not going to happen.
You're right. And I think that's raising a lot of questions as to, you know, what are the limitations of the Suez Canal?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, when it was built, I mean, you know, the boats that around that time, we're probably looking at over a century. The boats have just gotten larger and larger.
Oh, my gosh. The cargo ships are massive. Oh, they're huge. They're huge. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're huge. Yeah, and so that does raise a question. I mean, you know, what do we do? I mean, and you would have to, like, you know, really widen these banks. But to widen these banks, you know, how much are we looking at in terms
mm-hmm.
of cost to be able
yeah.
to do that? And the way that the canal, you know, if you look at a cross section of the canal, you know, the deepest part is in the middle of the canal, but the banks kind of gradually taper up. And so if you're not, you know, you're not steering this thing right, you may end up just lodging yourself, and sure enough, that's what happened with the Ever Given.
Wow, this is a crazy story. Well, I mean, I'm glad it worked out this time. And thank you to the moon. Thank you. We had to go to the moon to get us some help here on Earth. My goodness,
yeah,
that is
right.
a crazy
so we're
story.
We're going to have to make sure that all those big ships are going to have to, you know, line up, and that's when they can get through the canal, when there's a big moon and a
yeah.
neat, you know, spring
seriously.
Tide and all that.
Oh my gosh, get it together, boats. My goodness. Well, David, thank you for sharing this story this morning.
So
very, very cool.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right, have a great rest of your day.
Connecting commerce to your community. Bridgeport Regional Business Council President and CEO Dan Onofrio is on the Listen in the Morning on WICC 600.
Well, Dan, I think you heard it probably in our news update that it's pretty exciting. It sounds like they're going to be expanding outdoor dining restaurant permits and everything across Connecticut. That was just confirmed yesterday, so that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, good morning, Melissa. Yeah, for sure. You know, I love to be able to say we're getting the bars all open up, too.
Yeah, well, it's funny you bring that up, Dan, because that was a question I actually asked our audience about yesterday, like if there were any solutions, any possible solutions people had for bartenders, bar owners. And, you know, one of the things that I thought was interesting is the governor continues to push the idea of having like a vaccine passport or some kind of documentation proving you've gotten your vaccines. And I'm curious why we can't have something like that in place, since he's so nervous about people being in close quarters and drinking together. If you've all been vaccinated, the CDC already said you're good to all be together. So why not have something like that in place for bars? I don't know why there are no discussions going on for like a solution for them.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of questions related to that. I believe New York has a similar program, and you know, there's just, they just have to iron out the logistics of it, you know, like who's going to enforce it. And then beyond that, you know, is it the paper document? Is it your phone good enough that shows? Is it, you know, what is it exactly? And then, you know, obviously people are going to, like everything else, we were all young once before with fake IDs and all that other
sure.
stuff. So I think that's the concern from the governor's side and the state side.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the thing that just keeps hanging me up, honestly, Dan, and it's not like I'm attacking you by any means, but I mean, what I think is such a hang up to me is that we've made restaurant owners basically like cops and have to enforce things for customers. So I'm surprised, especially because bartenders have had to cut people off before. They've had to be cops before. Like, to me, why not even give them the opportunity, almost, I don't want to say like let them fall if they're really going to, but like, why not take any kind of a risk? It's been over a year. Like, there's no kind of ticket service we could do. Like, hey, you get two tickets every time you enter a bar, and once you use your two, you're done. Like, I'm not sure why we can't come up with any kind of solution to give any sort of light at the end of the tunnel for these folks. I feel horrible for them.
Yeah, you know, think of the folks that want to get back into work too, the bartenders and the wait staff and all the other stuff. So it's you know, it's got a rippling effect for sure. And I know we've been hearing a little bit more noise on it. You know, at the beginning, I think everyone kind of understood, especially with the cooler weather, you know, being stuck inside, the capacity issues. Now that things are starting to open up, you know, my fingers are crossed that dialogue is going to continue to happen. And, you know, if we can keep the infection rates low or at least stable, you know, I suspect, you know, we'll see some things opening up around the bars as well, hopefully soon.
Mm-hmm. Talking to Dan Onofrio this morning of the Bridgeport Regional Business Council. Now, Dan, I know just like a lot of our listeners, you're keeping a very close eye on some of the biggest bills that are trying to be passed in Hartford right now. We were talking about how now that New York is legalizing marijuana, it's probably not going to be that much longer before we see that happen in Connecticut. You've got the gas tax. You've got the planning and zoning and kind of eliminating local governance. I mean, there's a lot going on. What are some of the biggest things you'd say that you and the businesses in our area are kind of looking at and probably most nervous for?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of questions, at least from our government relations committee. We haven't come out publicly on many issues, but we've been having a lot of discussions, particularly around that TCI tax. That's the Transportation Climate Initiative. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's a double-edged sword, right? We don't necessarily want to tax businesses. And I would say right now it's 50-50. It's, you know, when you have a fleet of vehicles that are out on the road and there's concern there that, you know, oh gosh, it's another tax that's going to impact my business. But if you think about the long-term play, this is the other argument, is, you know, in the next 5-10 years, the majority of vehicles are probably going to be electrically driven in some way. Mm-hmm. So the volume of gas that we're going to be using is going to go down. So I think there needs to be that, you know, involved in the conversation, we need to think about longer term. And maybe there's a short-term impact to us, but longer term, there's a benefit down the road, especially as it relates to climate change and you know how we're using energy and what our carbon footprint is. So it's a good dialogue. I love listening to them. You know, but there's an argument for both sides, and you think, gosh, is now the right time? And you know, I think it's a good time to be having this discussion, whether something passes this session or not. Mm-hmm. We need to be talking about that stuff.
Well, and we know sports betting did pass and that Bridgeport is going to be able to benefit and have some kind of a venue in the city and be able to allow people to engage in that. And also we're just not sure really where that's going to be at this point. Like, do you have any kind of indication, any kind of inside knowledge as to where people are going to be able to do sports betting in Bridgeport? I know they have specifically called that out in this deal.
Yeah, I don't have anything to announce in terms of locations. I know there's a lot of discussions going on. Obviously, as you know, years ago, we were talking about a potential casino downtown on Steel Point. So this is an alternative to that, obviously, not at the same level or breadth of excitement. But, you know, I think it's a good revenue generator, not just for the city, but for the state. So location-wise, I don't have, but, you know, I think there's a lot more to come on that. I know there's a lot of people are kind of angling for positioning right now.
Yeah.
So it'll be an interesting development. And, you know, I think in the end, you know, the state needs the revenue and certainly the city can always use the help. So if it creates jobs and adds tax dollars to our grant list, it's a good thing.
And I was reading something actually this morning, Dan, out of Orange, Connecticut, where they just sold a property for more than $60 million. It was like a warehouse commercial property. And when I was reading the article, they were talking about how it's showing that there's still a lot of interest in people buying up commercial property. Now, a few weeks back, I had the Shelton mayor on who said the exact opposite. He's like, look, we're coming out of a pandemic. Nobody wants to buy commercial property. But, you know, you go to certain communities and like Ansonia, I feel like properties are getting bought up left and right in that city. So I was curious, like, what does it look like in Bridgeport, would you say? Like, what is our, like, outlook as far as did the pandemic really hurt us as far as getting rid of, like, vacant properties? Or are we finding that people are still coming into Bridgeport to open up their businesses?
Well, I will say this. There's definitely an interest in property in Bridgeport. Now, the challenge is... This is specific to Bridgeport. So every community is a little bit different in terms mm-hmm. of the opportunity. But Bridgeport, the challenge here, and it has been this way for a while, is we have old properties. We have old buildings. We have mm-hmm. old industrial sites. And there's probably not a property in Bridgeport that doesn't need some level of environmental due diligence. And that tends to be a bit of a detour for people that are looking to invest and, you know, turn over a property quickly. So there's things that have happened over the last year. The Transfer Act change, is, you know, theoretically makes it easier from a liability perspective on the environmental liability side of it for investors to purchase property. We have a lot of properties that fall into the opportunity zones, but that still needs to kind of be played out. All right, what is the long-term tax benefit as an investor? So there's all these dynamics that make really Bridgeport a unique place, because we get calls all the time. You know, I love that 15,000 square feet of warehouse space. You know, ironically, we don't have it, you know, unfortunately. Wow. So we leverage Stratford and we leverage Trumbull and our surrounding communities to try to, you know, work with our partners in the region to keep businesses here and hopefully to recruit new businesses to the area. But there is definitely an interest. Our phone's been ringing. Bridgeport is definitely on the map, especially as people are migrating, you know, northern Fairfield County out of New York. You know, we are seeing a little bit of an influx of phone calls and inquiries. It's just, we just don't have a lot of inventory, surprisingly. You would be like, what? You know, I saw these vacant buildings. And there's an interesting dynamic there between the historical relevance of that property and then just the type of use of that property. And ironically, to tag on to that, Bridgeport is going through a rezoning process right now.
Right. Yep. I remember that. Yep.
Yeah. Which is very significant because it may help us with this new form-based zoning that they're going through. It may help us spark some new economic development in neighborhoods that you probably wouldn't think you would put that kind of business in, that kind of use in. So, yeah. So there's a lot happening for Bridgeport, I think, as it relates to that stuff. But I would say there's an interest in Bridgeport. It's just we just don't have the inventory, you would think, right off the shelf.
Well, thank you, Dan. I appreciate that update, yeah. And I always appreciate chatting with you. We'll talk again next week.
You too, Melissa. Enjoy the long weekend coming up. Hopefully you have some time off.